This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Part of a global capitalist economy, a system that promised to benefit the rich and the poor alike. Yet, youth unemployment rate has been on the rise, salaries have stagnated for close to 20 years despite the massive increase in cost of living, cost of education is at an all-time high, and the average millennial and Gen Z cannot even afford adequate housing on a single paycheck despite it being a fundamental human right. So what went wrong and what's the solution? I'm Dashan Johan and this is Think Left on Beyond the Ballot Box, a series that explores various issues through a leftist or socialist prism with Party Socialist Malaysia. On the third episode, we hone in on the housing crisis. Why can't young people afford to buy houses anymore? I'm joined on the show by Sivarajan Arumugam. He's the Secretary General of Party Socialist Malaysia. Welcome to the show, Siva.
Thank you for having me again.
So let's start with a big general question that a lot of people have, especially a lot of people in my generation, about housing in Malaysia, right? And that is, why were our parents or grandparents able to buy houses when they were in their 20s? Because even at that point, when they were growing up, like say my parents who are now in their 50s and things like that, it was also already a capitalist society and things like that. But yet, you see a lot of people, even if you're working, you manage to secure a 9-to-5 job or you're a professional or something along those lines, you will be able to buy a house, sometimes even on a single paycheck. You don't need dual paycheck. One of them can even be a homemaker, help to raise the kids and things like that, but still buy a house. But most millennials today cannot buy a house unless they have some sort of privilege. Maybe they've gotten a transfer of wealth from their family and things like that. Why such a big difference?
Yeah, I think, Dashan, I think that's one of the crucial issues that most people are facing today, especially Malaysians, young mm-hmm. Malaysians. Because if you look at the house development plans under the Malaysian plans and so on since before, we can clearly see there was a conscious shift somewhere around the 1980s, whereby, you see, prior to 1980s, when just after Merdeka and so on, there was very clearly stated that the duty to provide housing for the people would be on the shoulders of the government. So that's why we had the Housing Board, the Lembaga Perumahan, and that developed into the Kementerian Perumahan and so on. But we saw this shift in policy back in somewhere around 1986, 1987, whereby the government opened up and invited the private sector to join hands and to also provide housing for the people. Mm-hmm. So at that particular time, the government had a policy which is also influenced by the expansion of neoliberal capitalism at that particular time, that they had a policy whereby to provide housing for the people, government will not only be the ones who are playing the role, mm-hmm. but private sector would be also having a large say in provision of housing for the people.
Right.
So that's why that we found that there's a lot of developments, private projects, a lot of alienation of land to private developers and expansion. Although it did sort of supply housing to the people, but unfortunately what we are left today is that the whole housing market, the whole housing pricing narrative has been taken over by the private sector. And we are here completely left at the mercy of the market, whereby we just have to buy houses which are being dictated by the private developers.
Right.
And the government has failed in its regulation process. The second impact that we also saw is that this great change in also a second shift in policy, mm-hmm. Somewhere in 2011, 2014, whereby I think you remember, Dashan, that those days we could always relate to what we know as low-cost housing.
Right.
Rumah kos rendah. But this is something that you don't hear of it now. So this is another, I would say that something which was orchestrated probably by the government in power and probably the developers in order to increase their profits, whereby it went in hand of sort of a narrative to say that why low-cost housing, it is something which is inferior.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was a lot of write-ups also in the media, and also the government ministers were also a mouthpiece to this. They also said, oh, no, low-cost housing, you know, we want to move forward. We are a developing nation. Low-cost
right.
housing is backward and so on. And they came up with a new terminology known as affordable housing.
Right.
Or in Malay, we would know it as rumah mampu milik. The problem with this terminology and this new definition is that it expanded the whole price range of rumah mampu milik, starting from anything from 42,000 up to 300,000. This was a big change. So anyone, a developer who's building a house from any housing within this range could be considered as complying to his social, corporate social responsibility. He could be complying to providing the quotas for low-cost housing and so on. But this huge range of houses in this price range from 42,000 to 300,000, and what it has resulted is that it has resulted in a skewed supply,
right,
whereby we found so many houses which are more in the price range of 200,000 and 300,000, and the number of houses which are actually built in the category of less than 100,000 is so little. So this is another problematic failure that we found, that it was consciously, we can also track it back to certain policy changes within certain state governments. I could relate to one in Selangor state government itself. So they clearly say that now we're going to do a rebranding. There's no more low-cost housing. We're going to name it Rumah Mampu Milik.
Right.
And immediately, if you look at the statistics, we can see that the price increase of houses shot up during this time, 2011 to 2014. And clearly about nearly 20% to 30%, prices clearly shot up. And so what has actually happened is that the market or the private developers have moved upwards. They only started to build more houses in the higher price range, and that has left a big gap from what people can really afford and what was actually in the market.
Right. Now, when you speak about market, when you talk about buying and selling, right, a lot of people may be confused about when we look at why how the prices of houses are so expensive. And the reason the confusion comes about is because when we talk about buying and selling, we often talk about supply and demand. So, you know, the basic concept of that is, let's say if I own a bakery and I'm selling bread, and if I got 10 pieces of bread and there are, you know, more people than there are bread, then the price will go up because, you know, the demand is very high, the supply is low. And vice versa, if there's so much of bread and so little people to buy the bread, then naturally the prices will go down. That's people's understanding of these things, right? But in Malaysia, you look at when it comes to the demand of housing, it's so incredibly high because everybody wants to buy a house. But the supply at the same time is also high because every day when you look around you, there's new housing projects coming in, new development and new townships and all of these things. Housing development projects are growing like mushrooms. And if you drive around any neighborhood, you will see plenty of houses that aren't occupied. It's the same for condos and all. You see so many units not taken up. And yet there are more houses being built and more houses being built. But at the same time, so the supply is very high. The demand is very high, but most people cannot afford to buy a house. Why is this so?
I think this is a great mismatch because usually, ideally, we would look at that the market should supply what the people can really afford. If people can afford this particular price range of houses and there's a great need for that, and the market should be following that and supplying the houses within that price bracket.
Right.
But what has happened here is that there's a great mismatch between what is being actually supplied and what people actually demand for. What people demand for, because you know housing now it's has been already a commodity, and the majority of people, they have to go for financing, right? No one's going to buy it off, right? At least the majority of the people, the B40, the M40s. So this, it ties down them to the capability of financing they're able to get. And if you really look at what people can really afford, they usually follow the rule of thumb, whereby we say is that the price of house that you can afford is usually three times your annual wage.
Right.
So, for example, if you just look at the government statistics itself, if the median wage was somewhere for a household was for, just say, 5,000 or something like that, I think it's back in 2016, whereby it was reported that the medium wage was about 5,288.
Right.
And that would make it to an annual wage about, say, 62,000.
Mm-hmm.
And if you times it with 3, it only comes up to about 180,000. So this is an indication to say that this is the value of house that you can really purchase. But if you really look at the values of house today, it is well above this. And that's why they go by an index, they call it. If the index is 3, meaning that 3 times your annual wage, then that particular house is affordable to you. But average houses which are being sold around the Klang Valley and even in Johor and Penang, they're well above 5, meaning that they're more than 5 times. So this is where we find a great disparity between actually what people can really afford and what is actually out in the market. So I think what has really happened here, like I said before, is that once there's a change in the policy and change in how these people have looked at low-cost housing and rebranding it into affordable housing, so I think the housing developers have taken advantage of this. What they have done is that they have maintained their supply part on the high price range. So they kept building on more and more houses, even though the demand was not so much for Malaysians on the high price range, but they have kept building it because the government stepped into the middle bracket. So the government played a role that they stepped inside and they had no choice but to sort of fill in the gap because the market was inefficient. The market did not follow what the people wanted. So the government had no choice and to fill in the gap. And this is also a mistake that we find, because the government, with its limited resources, had to step into a middle bracket. And the middle bracket, remember, it is still unaffordable.
Right.
Most of the houses today, even though they label it and they sort of call it as affordable housing, I mean, they're still 300,000. It's still 250,000, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It is still well above affordability of many, many people. I just gave an example of a median household income of 5,000.
Mm-hmm.
But how many people really have that kind of
income?
Absolutely. Now, we have not really talked about the B20 yet, those who are on minimum wage yet. So there's a huge chunk of people, the working class people, who are simply out of this whole scope. And even though the government has filled in the gap by providing houses 200,000, 300,000, but they have depleted themselves of resources on actually providing houses for the B20 and the B40, because they had to step in to fill in the gap. So they have sort of compromised on the responsibility to build more PPR houses, to build more real low-cost houses below 100,000. So this is the crisis that we see today. We find that the market has failed. The developers have kept to the high prices. The government, which should have focused on the poor, now it has expanded its responsibility to fill in the gap. And now we find that the poor people are still really bogged down. They cannot buy houses. The middle income, whereas those who are now have to be tied down with the prices of houses, which is 300 over 1,000, because the only thing what the government has done, it has only talked about credit easing, talked about facilitation of loans. Now, that does not really go far, because even though you're a young person, you're a new graduate, you're coming into the working life, you still have to carry the burden of 300 over 1,000.
Right.
Which sort of still works out about maybe about 1,300 per month for 35 loan tenure.
Right.
So it's still a huge burden. And even some people have talked about crazy things like, you know, intergenerational loans. No, we want to pass on our wealth to our children, not our burden of loans.
Absolutely.
Right? So this is how we find that how adamant the capitalists are, and they want to keep their profits. They're unable to meet the demands of the people, and they just want to maintain. And the government has bent backwards to fill in the gap and not regulate the big developers and the capitalists, not giving them pushing on them to build houses. Now, this was very much different prior to, like I said, the 1990s, 1980s. Mm. Remember those days, any development, mixed development, had to fulfill a quota of 30%, 30%, 10%. Any development that happens or around the city or in the suburbans, they will have to build 30% low cost, compulsory, 30% medium cost, and only 10% is high cost.
Right.
This was a government regulation. If you don't fulfill this regulation, your development is not approved. So this is where we found that the lobbyists of the private developers, you know, has been so strong that they were able to change all of these policies, rebrand this whole quota into something now we call Rumah Mampu Milik, and they grouped this whole bunch of houses into Rumah Mampu Milik, which is not really affordable. And that is why that you find that there's very rarely any mixed development now. You find there's a whole lot of big development, which is all high price, and you don't find any low cost in the same area.
Now, you talk about, you know, quota systems, you talk about regulating the developers, but I'm also wondering, what impact does housing as an investment have on this ridiculous housing prices that we have here in Malaysia? And what I mean by that is, you ask around, a lot of people who come from, let's say, certain privileged backgrounds and things like that, you also know that whether it's people in power and all of these people, a lot of them, they buy houses as not to live in, but to invest. They buy for the purpose of, oh, I know property prices will go up, so I'm going to buy 10 houses. I'm going to buy 10 units of condos, 15 units of condos, or, you know, if you can't afford 10 or 15, but I'm just going to buy 3, 4, and then the price will go up, and then I'll flip, or I'll buy a few, and then I'll rent it out, and things like that. Is looking at housing as an investment rather than a place that you live in a bad thing?
I think it is a problem, okay, because now I think it has gone overboard and no one has got any control of it, because this is one of the consequences of capitalism itself, when people's necessities are converted into commodities that they can be sold for profit. So once a house is looked at upon as a commodity, then basically you're going to buy it not as something that you want to use. It's no more use value for you. Mm-hmm. It's basically an exchange value. You're going to exchange it for something else. So what happens is that in a situation whereby there is a limitation and there is always an increase in the population. So naturally what is happening here is that if you have a house to stay and then you buy another house to invest, supposedly to rent it, basically what you're doing is that you are depriving another person from getting that particular house.
Right.
And worse still, as you said earlier, is when people sort of want to increase their investment profile, they buy multiple units and there's no control over it. So what you're basically doing is that you're basically creating that demand, and then you're hiking the prices, which of course the developers are much happier about it.
Right.
You know? So who is actually benefiting from here is that it's not the people that actually require houses. Mm-hmm. So what is being happening now is that people who really need houses, they're being deprived. And now it's been taken over by this whole profit-making business.
Right.
Of course, there are people who say that, okay, maybe I have a house to stay, I'm getting old, I'll just buy another house, so probably I could rent it out and have some income for my old age. I mean, that is still fine. Probably you can pass on the house to your children. But the problem really lies when this thing really goes overboard. And like what you said, if you go to most of the condominiums, you drive around Mount Kiara or Hartamas at night, you'll find that very rarely most of the houses are lit because they're empty, right? And those people who are living there, probably the expats or something like that. So here is a problem whereby the land has been used. People have built the houses, and the houses were purchased by people who are not really staying there.
Right.
So the land use is already gone. And here we have a situation whereby the government is deprived, does not have enough land to build PPR houses.
Mm-hmm.
So here we find there's a whole disparity and inequality which is happening here.
On the show with me today is Sivarajan Arumugam, Secretary General at Parti Socialist Malaysia. After the break, I ask him what socialism's solution to the housing problem. Keep it here on Think Left on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Think Left on Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Sivarajan Arumugam, Secretary General of Parti Socialist Malaysia. On the third episode of this series, we are discussing the housing crisis. So, Siva, does Malaysia have a housing crisis right now from your vantage point? Are we expecting the bubble to eventually burst?
I think we are in a crisis. I think the reason Khazana reports, and I think many people have really talked about it, what we can summarize is that there's a great overhang, there's a great oversupply of prices of property above 500,000, and there's really a great need of houses below 100,000, and there's also a huge need of properties where people would just want to rent. These are basically for the B20.
Right.
So we are in a great crisis now. So what we see now is that basically the young people simply cannot think of buying houses, and that is why that this whole narrative of I think in future, there's no more of owning a house. You just go for renting and so on.
Right.
And this will, I think it will get worse. Because if the government does not step in and resolve this problem, it's going to get worse. And what the government has done so far, it is not resolving the problem, but basically, like I said earlier, it's made it worse. Because what the government should have done is that it should have focused its priority in providing housing for the poor, the B20 and the B40, and at the same time should have pressured the developers to bend their prices to meet the needs of the majority of the M40 and so on. But that they did not do. So what has happened now is that you have dual problem now.
Right.
You have a problem where the developers are still so adamant and they are resisting to build houses even to meet the M40 needs. And the government, because it's stretching its hands on both sides, now it is compromising its responsibility to build PPRs. Because if you look at the last 5-10 years, very rarely would have seen any new PPR come out.
Right.
And if you go to DBKL, you are basically, if you're asking for a PPR for your family and if you're eligible, you are basically in the waiting list of what, another 10,000 people. So there's a great shortage of housing. And this is something which is very urgent because urbanization is always increasing. Population is increasing.
Right.
So we are in a situation whereby there's a great population increase. More people are coming to cities to settle down, especially just after the pandemic when jobs are so a problem. And then you have no housing to provide for people.
Right.
So I think the issue is getting more and more problematic, whereby people are now forced into solutions provided by the market. So now we find that the housing is being moving into something which was supposedly something suitable for you to live in. Now people are moving into houses just for you to go and sleep at night. That's why you find that some units, I mean, it's basically very crazy, you know. Some units are being built in the city at lower prices, but it's something like, 300 square feet?
That is ridiculously small.
Ridiculous, yeah. So it's just in this one room kind of thing, you know. You're living in the city, just come and stay here. So housing today, it is no more a place where you can have some leisure, where you relax after work, where you build a home. House today is no more a home, you know. Those days, home was something else, very different.
Mm-hmm.
So what has happened is that problem is not being resolved. People are being pushed into solutions yet again by the market. And that is sort of like destroying people's lives, you know, going into smaller spaces, going into more congested areas, building more and more condominiums, high rise, you know, you come out, you're stuck in the traffic. So these are the solutions being provided today.
Right.
We are not coming out of the market, you know. So that is why that we from PSM, what we would say is that you have to take out housing, especially housing for the poor, from the market influences. Then right. only you can solve it.
Now, you brought up PPR flats, and let's talk about our neighboring country, Singapore. A lot of what you mentioned earlier, right, ties back to capitalism and the consequences of, you know, unregulated capitalism and things like that. But we know for a fact that Singapore is a highly, highly capitalist country as well. Why are the conditions of our PPR flats so bad when we drive past it? In fact, a lot of people say, oh my God, it's just rotting away. There's no maintenance. It hasn't been painted in God knows how many years. You can see mold at the side of the walls and cars are parked all over the place. A lot of places, there's no elevator and all sorts of things. But then when we look at Singapore, Singapore has a fantastic public housing. Most people I know, Singaporeans living in their HDB flats, which is government projects. Essentially, their HDB flats are like our PPR flats. But it looks fantastic. It looks like everybody is living with dignity and they like their houses. And how is a highly capitalist country like Singapore able to do it, but Malaysia wasn't able to do the same?
I think in Singapore, there's one statistic which says that nearly 78% of Singaporeans live in this HDB public housing.
Right.
I think the issue, yes, Singapore is a capitalist country, but I think what they could not overcome is, of course, the land scarcity that they have. So I think that is one thing, right, that they did was that they took upon their own shoulders, the government itself, to provide housing because they simply could not afford to take in private developers to come in and develop different lands. So Singapore being Singapore, highly regulated, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, they wanted a population in their country to stay there, to live and to work and to provide for the economy. So I think the only way they could do this is that to make sure that housing was at least provided efficiently and nearby where they could work and so on. So I think on that part, when the government took over that responsibility, it was effective. It was successful. Unlike what has happened in Malaysia, if you look at the PPR housing itself, see, this PPR itself, it was actually built, most of it was built under the context of a transit home. That is why what you said earlier, why it is just falling apart.
Right.
Because these homes were supposed to be transit homes. Not all of it, but majority of it. Meaning that people who are being displaced from different areas, for example, in early 2000s, especially in Selangor, we have forced evictions everywhere. This was under the previous Menteri Besar, Kir Toyo, when he created the zero squatter policy, whereby huge numbers of villages in the suburban areas were being evicted, basically as a land-grabbing exercise for the private developers. Right. So people were all pushed into the PPR housing. But I remember very well at that particular time, because we were involved in those cases, people were supposedly going to these PPR houses for transit purposes, 2 years, 3 years, until and when they were economically viable, they could buy houses in the market. But what happened, like I said earlier, is that you put these people there and you don't have a way out for them. You never really planned affordable housing for them. You just left it to the market. And once these people already moved in there and they really wanted to buy houses outside, when they looked outside, what the prices in the market was completely unaffordable.
Right.
Because the government failed to provide. The market basically was selling houses at 300, 400 over 1,000. So what could these people do? So they remained in these houses. So until today, you can go into the PPRs in Selangor, in PGA. They have been living there for 20 years. And this is not a transit home. Right. No more. It's no more transit. It's basically, their children grew up in these PPR flats. So what do you expect of the facilities? A home which was built for transit. The idea was that people would come in, stay there for 2 years, go out and buy their houses, and then the next family would come in. So there should have been an exchange. So here we find is that the people who are now living, the B20 who are living the PPR houses, they are unable to buy houses outside, such they remain there. And the new population which is coming in, the new urban poor which is coming in, they don't get houses. The thing of concern as how PPR is being managed in Malaysia is also very disappointing, because there's so many crisscross of authorities involved. We have come across whereby PPRs are built by the federal government, sitting on a state land, but managed by the local council. So until today, there's always this problem, who manages who, you know, where does this money go from? I mean, in terms of maintenance, they have completely the wrong concept, because public housing being public housing, you have to subsidize it. There is no way that you can expect to get revenue from the rental, like how you do it in a medium-cost condominium and so on, because they will have a JMB and they were able to maintain. But here you're only collecting about 200 ringgit, 120 ringgit, and most of them are poor. Just after the pandemic, they have no income. They have not paid. They have arrears in their rental. So there's no way the amount that you're going to collect from the rental is going to pay for the maintenance, especially when the lift breaks down. No way. So what some of the local councils have done is that they have only relied on this. They say that, yes, if I collect enough money, I'll repair it. If I don't collect enough money, I'm not going to repair it. So it's basically a chicken and egg situation where the facilities get worse and worse and worse, and the people living there get more and more frustrated. They refuse to pay. So those population who wanted to pay, now they don't pay anymore. So here we find there's a whole cycle of problem happening, because the authorities are not committed. They are not subsidizing it well. And then the people are getting more and more frustrated because they're unable to go out to have a better home, to have a better environment, living environment. So we find this great cycle of problems coming up. And that is also relating to social problems and so on.
I'm wondering, Siva, especially over the past few years, there seems to be this narrative in which the media tries to frame perpetual renting as a good thing. I'm thinking about, you know, all these articles on many, many, many websites, whether it's those websites where you like to share on social media a lot and things like that, where they talk about how young people have no interest in buying houses anymore. They have no interest in you know, purchasing or a property and things like that because, you know, young people love to travel the world and they have no interest in buying a house. And so if you are a cool person, if you're a hip 20-something-year-old, don't bother buying. Renting is your way to go. I'm wondering if you've noticed things like that. And I'm wondering if there is sort of like this framing that perpetual renting is a good thing.
I think you're very correct about the framing part of it. Mm-hmm. Because this all leads back to even how wealth was also accumulated during those days. This is basically, we can say, is a form or manifestation of the fencing of the commons itself. So whereby what was common to the people, the land and so on, where the private property has taken over. So there's only a small group of people who are trying to get more and more of this private property and thus denying other people. See, house, what does it really mean? If a person is given the right to purchase a house, it is affordable, he has a property he has a property and he has got some kind of wealth, he can hand it over. So what is happening now is that people now, they are depriving people from having that small property, and the wealth is being concentrated to a small group of people, which is could be the developers or even those house owners or landowners who are very rich and so on. So that is why they are trying to play this narrative to say that, no, you do, please don't think about owning a house, rental is cool and so on. But what does it really apply to them also? Can I also tell the big capitalists, yeah, don't think about owning more development and don't buy land, don't develop. Same should apply, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I'm cool, so are you. Same should apply. But no. But actually what is being created now is that with this narrative, they are consolidating themselves. So only a certain group of people will hold the majority of property or houses or whatever. And you're creating another class society in this level, whereby those who own property and those who are renting property. So this is another division. Like in those days in the feudal society,
right,
you had the great lords and the nobles, you know, who owned the land, and people would just come and work and then go back, you know. Mm-hmm. They don't own the land. So this is another way that the commons are being fenced up, and they are moving into, and what they are playing it very correctly is that putting out this whole story and this way of thinking, this framing to tell you that you should go for renting. At the same time, they have kept the prices high, like I said earlier. So once prices are high, naturally, you are not accessible to those houses anymore. So you have already created this current generation. You have already, it's already in play. You already made a huge lot of people, the current generation, who are just basically given up on buying houses.
Okay. Right.
And they have managed to keep that. Because if you really wanted to look at housing as a right, housing as a human right people should own, then naturally you should sort of provide to the population. But what they made here is that they have kept this whole land bank and this whole development and this commons fenced up for themselves such that you only can rent it there.
I want to ask a moral, philosophical question, a big picture question, which I've started to think about a lot lately. Because when we break housing and shelter down to its bare basics, right? There was a time in history, prehistory, where, you know, a family or tribe need only to find an empty plot of land, wherever that is. And then they just build their house there. They will farm the lands, they'll take care of the lands and so on and so forth. And that is what essentially a house is. But now, not only do people can't afford to buy houses anymore, even the homeless aren't even allowed to sleep on the streets or in the park because the police will chase them away, especially if you're in affluent neighborhoods, right? What is your take on that? This idea that, you know, at one point, anybody, you just set up your own place, this is your plot of land, you can stay there, you build it up. To now, not only is housing not even not affordable, those who cannot afford to buy a house, they cannot afford to rent, they cannot even sleep on a park bench.
Yeah, I think it's very, what it really shows is how the society has deteriorated, you know, very badly. So whereby it has gone in a way that people are buying into this whole discussion is that what human needs to survive, it is no more dependent on whether you're a human being, it's a need and it's a social obligation, but it's basically it's determined by how deep your pocket is. You know, so when all human needs, they are commodified and they're put into the market, so the only way you can access to it is whether you have money or not. So if that is how it goes, with, even with this situation, we talk about homeless. You say that, oh, homeless, you know, yes, he's sleeping there, you know. But then there's always the other argument that comes, you know. Yeah, he's a homeless because he did not work, he's lazy, he did not get enough money. If he did all this, he could have bought a house.
Right.
Right. So you justify of not providing him with that right. While at the same time, you have fenced up the commons. You have made it so difficult for him to get a particular house. Even people who have a job, who have money, they are also being fenced out now.
Right.
What more him, you see?
Mm-hmm.
So what we, the society, what is more coming to it is that we are coming a society which is going into this. Everything is in the market. There's nothing that we should do to provide needs for the people and everything. And it's basically a race where you have to survive. So what is going to happen is getting more and more worse, whereby more and more areas are being developed. As you can see, even now in Kuala Lumpur and the big cities, where those areas which were public parks, they've been taken over more and more. At least when they were public parks, there was a possibility that we could argue, you know, I want to sleep here. It's public, isn't it?
Right.
This is owned by the local council. I don't have a house. I want to sleep here. So at least we could have used that kind of argument. But now what we are facing is more and more areas have been taken over by private property. You know, you cannot even stand there. And what we are going into is probably a privately owned public park. So they sort of give you a window dressing to say, oh, it's a public park, you know, look, it's very nice, we have fountains and everything. But no, you have to get permission to whatever that you want to do there. So this is where we are moving into, where the more common spaces where people are able to do freely whatever they want to do have been taken over. And more so of this situation where poor people are even unable to get some kind of shelter.
Right.
And on the other side, where the government has also failed to provide these people who are sort of left out in the society, some kind of minimum shelter at least.
Right.
Yeah.
What is socialism's solution to this housing problem, especially in Malaysia?
I think the first thing we should start out with is that we should put housing as a human right. I think that's the main thing. The second thing is that does not mean that we're going to dismantle the whole market system and sort of like expropriate all the private developers. No, not really. Not yet, of course. What we're trying to say is that I think realizing housing is a human right, thus our focus should be to the vulnerable group, those people who are in the B40 and B20 group. And here's where the government must take upon its shoulders to ensure that these people are provided housing. And the only way they can do that in the current situation is that they must take away the housing for the poor, for the public, for the B40, from the influences of the market. Because what we see in the market now is that how it's a whole cycle of influence from the land price, from the transaction price, the facilities that comes into the place, and whatever property which was developed there before, you know. So all this comes into play to really price the new property development at any particular location. So if the government goes by this logic, there's no way they're going to build a house which is affordable for the people. No. So the government must really look at really keeping its own land banks, which is very important. Because once the government alienates it to a mall, a shopping mall and so on, or to whatever it is, then it has no more control over it. But until today, we find that most state governments, this is what they do. This is another problem with the federal system that we have today. Yeah? So most state governments are just alienating a lot of really prime land just to get money into their coffers. And all this is wasted, building malls, building other things, highways and so on. So these are the primary land which should be used for public housing. And only then, if you take it out from the market, then only you can build houses which can be built affordable. The second thing I would say is that, like I said, the responsibility must fall on the government. And here is where the government must set up a non-profit housing board, something like in
right.
Singapore, which the sole purpose of it is to build houses and to provide houses for people in this particular group. We were doing this before. We had PKNS before, which really built houses, made a very easy payment scheme. You know, people could just go to the land office, make monthly payments. But now PKNS is just another like a corporate developer, building houses 600,000, 700,000 and so on. So here's again, it's another failure. The third thing that we propose is that the largest land bank owners in Malaysia, we could say it's still the GLCs. They don't portray themselves like anything like a government-linked company. They are fully a corporate, you know, they are profit motive and so on. But they have a huge land bank. So we would really argue that they must allocate their land banks to provide for public housing. Mm-hmm. So this are talking about housing where people, at least they have some kind of income they can purchase for 42,000, 50,000, so on. But there is a large group of people. If you really break down the poverty and so on, we have the B20, we have the B10s. These people can only rent.
Right.
So you must have sufficient houses, PPR houses, for people can rent. Now, until today, no, just to give an example of mm-hmm. one area which I've been working, it is so difficult to find a PPR house in Cameron Highlands.
Right.
Yeah, Cameron Highlands, you know. The last time I think they would have built a PPR house there, which I've seen, there's only about two or three projects, maybe back in the 1970s and 80s.
That's ages ago.
Ages ago. So what right. so what is the solution they have for the current population there? And the only houses which they are now building now is basically the Project Rakyat Prima, Satu Malaysia, which in Cameron Highlands is sold at about 200 over 1,000 because it's high ground, you know. Mm-hmm. So what are all those poor people going to do? In Cameron Highlands, the majority of working people, they're not working in big factories and so on. They are farmers. They're cattle rearers, they're working in small shops and so on. And they desperately need a PPR house. And until today, there is no PPR house for them. So what do they do? So here's where we find is that there's simply a lack of government focus and responsibility in providing housing for the people. So I think these are the main areas which immediately can be done. It is not something which is impossible. These things can be immediately done.
All right, before we wrap this conversation up, Siva, would you have some final thoughts or a final message for us?
Yeah, I think housing, it is a crisis. It's one of the most crucial crises we are facing. Mm-hmm. I think the recent survey amongst the young people today, housing was one of the top things. People are really worried about housing. And unfortunately, even when I looked at the 12th Malaysia plan end of last year, there's a lot of rhetorics but no solutions. So we are heading into a big problem whereby things will get worse when the government still shrugs off its responsibility to provide housing, still relies on the market to provide housing. Things are going to get real worse. So I think it's very important for people to really voice out these things to say that this housing has to be looked upon as a human right and not as a commodity that is only available for those who can afford.
On that note, thank you so much for joining me today, Siva. That was Sivarajan Arumugam, Secretary General at Parti Socialist Malaysia. If you missed any part of our conversation, you can check us out on podcasts. We're available on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Darshan Johan, and this has been Think Left on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.